Hare Krishna. So we're reading from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, chapter 14, entitled Lord Chaitanya's Childhood Pastimes, text 69. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation. My dear gopis, I accept your desire to have me as your husband and thus worship me. I wish your desire to be fulfilled because it deserves to be so. Purport. The gopis, the girlfriends of Krishna, were almost of the same age as he. Within their minds, they desired that Krishna be their husband. But because of feminine bashfulness, they could not express their desire. Therefore, later on, after stealing their garments, Krishna informed them, I immediately understood your desire and approved of it. Because I have now stolen your garments, you have presented yourselves before me completely naked, which means that I have accepted you, all of you, as my wives. Sometimes foolish rascals, not knowing the purpose of the Lord or the purpose of the gopis, unnecessarily criticize from their own angle of vision. But the real purpose of Vastra Harana is expressed by the Lord in this verse. Om Agyan Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Umritam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Vande Sri Krishna Chaitanya Nityanando Sahodito Godadaye Pushpavanto Chitro Shando Tamo Nudo. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Sri Krishna Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, who are like the sun and moon. They have arisen simultaneously on the horizon of Goda to dissipate the darkness of ignorance and thus wonderfully bestow benediction upon all. Sankalpo vidita sadhyo bhavatinam madachanam mayanumodita soso satyo bhavatamahati. My dear gopis, I accept your desire to have me as your husband and thus worship me. I wish your desire to be fulfilled because it deserves to be so. So here it's Lord Chaitanya is quoting this verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's from the 10th canto, 22nd chapter, and the 25th verse. The context in which Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu speaks the verse is that he had been teasing the young girls of Navadvip. I'll just go back, since a lot of us may not be aware of what's happened leading up to this point. In this chapter, a few verses earlier. Lord Chaitanya, it says, sometimes the Lord, with other children, would go to take bath in the Ganges, and the neighboring girls would also come there to worship various demigods. When the girls, after bathing in the Ganges, engaged in worshipping the different demigods, the young Lord would come there and sit down among them. Addressing the girls, the Lord would say, worship me, and I shall give you good husbands or good benedictions. The Ganges and the goddess Durga are my maidservants. Not to speak of other demigods, even Lord Shiva is my servant. And one point that Srila Prabhupada is referring in the purport to this verse, he's referring to unnecessary criticism from people who look at this pastime of the disrobing of the gopis from their own angle of vision. And one of the things is that the girls were worshipping Durga. So it would seem that they're naturally not following Krishna's instructions as he gives it in Bhagavad Gita. Kamaistasta hritagana prabhajantena devataha tam tam niyamamashtaya prakritya niyata swaya. Only persons whose intelligence is lost and who are mad with lusty desires worship the demigods and follow the particular rules and regulations of worship according to their own natures. And there are quite a few other verses along the same lines in the 7th chapter of the Gita and in the 9th chapter as well. So, actually, this I'm going to go through the original verse and the pastime that leads up to that a little bit in a moment, which will explain quite nicely how the gopis should not be criticized for worshipping Durga. But in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, it continues to say, without the permission of the girls, the Lord would take the sandalwood pulp and smear it on his own body, put the flower garlands on his neck, and snatch and eat all the offerings of sweetmeats, rice, and bananas. All the girls became very angry at the Lord at this behavior. Dear Nimai, they told him, you are just like our brother in our village relationship. Therefore, it does not behoove you to act like this. Don't take our paraphernalia for worship of the demigods. Don't create a disturbance in this way. The Lord replied, my dear sisters, I give you the benediction that your husbands will be very handsome. So, one interesting point here just occurred to me is that he's calling them sisters. So, it's a little different from the mood in Vrindavan. But it's essentially a similar pastime. He said, there, your husbands will be learned, clever, and young, and possess abundant wealth and rice. Not only that, but you will each have 7 sons, who will all live long lives and be very intelligent. So hearing this benediction, all the girls were very happy. But externally, as it is natural for girls, they rebuked the Lord under the pretense of anger. And Prabhupada mentions how this is a normal feminine attribute, dealing, to pretend to be dissatisfied when actually they're quite satisfied. When some of the girls fled, the Lord called them in anger and advised them as follows, if you are miserly and do not give me the offerings, every one of you will have an old husband with at least 4 co-wives. Hearing this supposed curse by Lord Chaitanya, the girls, considering that he might know something uncommon or be empowered by demigods, were afraid that his curse might be effective. So then they brought all the offerings before the Lord, who ate them all and blessed the girls to their satisfaction. Then it describes how he met Lakshmi, who was to become his wife, and she worshipped him. With great satisfaction of her mind. And and then after the verse before this was, being worshipped by Lakshmi, the Lord began to smile. He recited a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam and thus accepted the emotion she expressed. And he spoke this verse, "My dear gopis, I accept your desire to have me as your husband and thus worship me. I wish your desire to be fulfilled because it deserves to be so." So the other misunderstanding that some critics may have is that Krishna is playing around with girls, and this is immoral. and that's what Srila Prabhupada is referring to in the purport to this verse. So there's some very nice verses and purports in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and the purports obviously by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. So just to get a little idea of the pastime itself, in chapter 22 of the 10th canto, Shukadev Goswami said, "During the first month of the winter season, the young unmarried girls of Gokula observed the vow of worshipping goddess Katyayani for the entire month. They ate only unspiced khichdi." So that's quite austere for a whole month just to eat unspiced khichdi. So they were very serious, they're very determined. And in actual fact, there's the word here, sankalpa. In this verse, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Prabhupada describes sankalpa as desire. But I was looking up that word because it seems to have quite a few different translations. Determination is quite a prominent translation. And but this is an important point that comes up not in Srila Prabhupada's purport so much, but in the purport of his disciples in this original verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which we'll get to in a moment. "My dear king, after they had bathed in the water of the Yamuna, just as the sun was rising, the gopis made an earthen deity of goddess Durga on the riverbank. Then they worshipped her with such aromatic substances as sandalwood pulp, along with other items, both opulent and simple, including lamps, fruits, betel nuts, newly grown leaves, and fragrant garlands and incense. Each of the young unmarried girls performed her worship while chanting the following mantra: O goddess Katyayani, O great potency of the Lord, O possessor of great mystic power and mighty controller of all, please make the son of Nanda Maharaj my husband. I offer my obeisances unto you." So this is where those critics may think that, or otherwise, they may just accept it as an excuse for worshipping the demigods, that the gopis, who are considered the highest devotees of the Lord, they're worshipping demigods. Oh, I'm in the wrong place here. So the disciples of Srila Prabhupada, they explain that the acharyas have said that actually the form of Katyayani or Durga that they're worshipping isn't the form of the goddess Durga or Kali in the material world. According to various acharyas, they say, the goddess Durga mentioned in this verse is not the illusory energy of Krishna called Maya, but rather the internal potency of the Lord known as Yoga Maya. The distinction between the internal and external or illusory potency of the Lord is described in the Narada Pancharatra. So they're explaining that it is an internal potency of the Lord that they're worshipping. So they're not actually worshipping a demigoddess as such. So that is an answer to those criticisms. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda ki jai. Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai. Shri Shri Gauranitai ki jai. So there's quite a long purport to that. If you're interested more, you can read the whole purport. Thus, for an entire month, the girls carried out their vow and properly worshipped the goddess Bhadrakali, fully absorbing their minds in Krishna and meditating upon the following thought: may the son of King Nanda become my husband. So this is also another very essential part of the pastime, that Krishna was the focus, the focal point of their worship, because they were meditating upon Krishna. That was their sankalpa, to get the son of Nanda as their husband. So they're not, generally, the demigods, as in the verse I quoted a little earlier, are worshipped for some material gain. Excuse me, but this is not for some material gain. It's to get Krishna only as their husband. So that's a big difference. Each day they rose at dawn, calling out to one another by name. They all held hands and loudly sang the glories of Krishna while going to the Kalindi to take their bath. One day they came to the riverbank and, putting aside their clothing as they had done before, happily played in the water while singing the glories of Krishna. And in the purport to this verse, it's interesting that according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, actually they invited Radharani to come with them, and other prominent gopis, possibly Lalita, Vishakha, doesn't mention, but says, and other important gopis. So they were actually also present at that time. Presumably they also wanted to have Krishna as their husband. Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead and master of all masters of mystic yoga, was aware of the gopis, what the gopis were doing, and thus he went there, surrounded by his young companions, to award the gopis the perfection of their endeavor. And another point they bring up, which Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions, is that the companions who went with Krishna to the Kalindi, the Yamuna, were actually just toddlers of 2 or 3 years old. So it's not like they... So I think... they were unaware of the difference between male and female. So they were not going to be affected by this episode. And they just accompanied Krishna because they couldn't bear to lose Krishna's association. So they just tagged on along. And because they were innocent and young children, then Krishna allowed them to come along. Taking the girl's garments, he quickly climbed to the top of a kadamba tree. Then, as he laughed loudly and his companions also laughed, he addressed the girls jokingly. Lord Krishna said, "My dear girls, you may each come here as you wish and take back your garments. I'm telling you the truth and not joking with you, since I see you're fatigued from executing austere vows. I have never before spoken a lie, and these boys know it." That's an interesting one. Sometimes Krishna appears to tell lies. He denies that he steals yogurt and gets up to mischief, denies he's eating dirt, like that. But anyway, seeing how Krishna was joking with them, the gopis became fully immersed in love for him, and as they glanced at each other, they began to laugh and joke amongst themselves, even in their embarrassment. But still they did not come out of the water. And there's a nice purport, which you can read in your own time, explaining some more conversation that they had, if you're interested. As Sri Govinda spoke to the gopis in this way, his joking words completely captivated their minds. Submerged up to their necks in cold water, they began to shiver. Thus they addressed him as follows. The gopis said, "Dear Krishna, don't be unfair. We know you are the respectable son of Nanda and that you are honored by everyone in Vraja. You are also very dear to us. Please give us back our clothes. We are shivering in the cold water. O Shama Sundara, we are your maidservants and must do whatever you say. Please give us back our clothing. You know what the religious principles are, and if you don't give us our clothes, we will have to tell the king. Please. So Krishna replied, if you girls are actually my maidservants, and if you really do what I say, then come here with your innocent smiles and let each girl pick up out her clothes. If you don't do what I say, I won't give them back to you. And even if the king becomes angry, what can he do? So Krishna was quite determined as well, not just the gopis. Then, shivering from the painful cold, all the young girls rose up out of the water, covering their private area with their hands. So they put aside their embarrassment just for the sake of Krishna. And when the Supreme Lord saw how the gopis were struck with embarrassment, he was satisfied by their pure loving affection. Putting their clothes on his shoulder, the Lord smiled and spoke to them with affection. He said, you girls bathe naked while executing your vow, and that is certainly an offense against the demigods. To counteract your sin, you should offer obeisances while placing your joined palms above your heads. Then you should take back your garments. So it explains in the purport that Krishna wanted to see their full surrender. And that's what was pleasing him. Even though they were beautiful young girls, he was never actually agitated or affected by or wanted to see them naked. It was actually just to see their surrender. So Krishna is never affected. He's always transcendental. The purport says, we should not foolishly think that Lord Krishna is an ordinary lusty boy enjoying the naked beauty of the gopis. So that's the answer to the other criticism, that Krishna is just an ordinary lusty boy. But according to the Bhagavatam, that's not the case. Krishna is the supreme absolute truth. He was acting to fulfill the loving desire of the cowherd girls of Vrindavan. In this world, we would certainly become lusty in a situation like this. But to compare ourselves to God is a great offense. And because of this offense, we will not be able to understand Krishna's transcendental position. For we will wrongly take him to be materially conditioned like ourselves. So the gopis, they did as Krishna asked, and Krishna, he fulfilled their desire because they were asking every day for a whole month, doing great austerities, eating only unspiced khichdi, standing in the cold water, praying for Krishna to get their son, to get the son of Nanda as their husband, and he fulfilled that desire. So and this is what why Lord Chaitanya is quoting this verse, because he's also going to fulfill the desire of Lakshmi, who he'll be married to in due course of time. So an interesting point that came for me in the actual verse in the Bhagavatam is a slightly different translation. In that it says, Lord Krishna said, O saintly girls, I understand that your real motive in this austerity has been to worship me. That intent of yours is approved by me, and indeed it must come to pass. So it's spelt out in the Bhagavatam that actually Krishna's approval is required. Without Krishna's approval, then nothing is satisfactory. So there's a couple of points which I'd like to bring out. And that, first of all, this word sankalpa, or desire, In the Bhagavatam translation, or word-for-word translation, the word is translated as motivation. And in fact, the previous verse also has sankalpa in it, and it's also translated as motivation rather than desire, as Srila Prabhupada translates it. So desire, motivation, determination, intent, they're all similar. And so obviously we have to have a very strong desire to attain Krishna. And we have to become determined, just like these gopis were very determined, and they were prepared to go through all austerities in order, and even give up their so-called religious principles, their embarrassment of being naked in front of a young boy, in order to fulfill their desire to get Krishna as their husband. So, and also I was thinking of a few pastimes or stories where it seems like here you could argue, as Srila Prabhupada mentioned, some people do argue from their own angle of vision, that actually the gopis were not doing the right thing, worshipping a demigoddess. And I was just thinking there are a few examples of devotees who don't seem to do the right thing, and yet they get the Lord's mercy. And so, and there's also the opposite example where somebody's doing completely the right thing, and they don't get the Lord's mercy. So how is this, and why is this? So one example I was thinking of was the example of the old lady, I think her name was Sobari, who was a devotee of Lord Ram. And she'd been told to wait for Lord Ram by her guru, who left this world. And she was left alone in an ashram, and she was collecting fruits. And these fruits needed to be tasted, because sometimes the fruit may be bitter, sometimes it may be sweet. And without tasting it, you can't tell. So she was tasting every fruit, and then if it was sweet, she would put it aside to offer to Lord Ram. And if it was bitter, she would throw it away, like that. So she waited for many, many years. And ultimately, Lord Ram did come. And she was always preparing the ashram where she stayed, keeping it nice and clean, beautiful, and preparing these fruits for her. For him when he came. Everything was ready when he came. So Lord Ram came, and she started to give him fruits, and she was tasting them and then passing them. And Lord Ram was eating them and relishing them. And actually, Lakshman, who was with him, was horrified. Can't you see what she's doing? She's tasting them first. Now, this is generally considered totally contrary to the proper etiquette, the proper rules and regulations. You don't taste when you're cooking, you don't taste anything. When you're offering it, you don't taste it first and then discard it if it's not good. But Lord Ram, he was actually very pleased with Sobari, and he accepted those. So that's one instance where a devotee didn't appear to be following the rules and regulations properly. There's a story of the Brahmana and the cobbler. Raghunath Prabhu was giving class. He told this story on Friday, Thursday night. And I won't go through the whole story, but I think most of you probably know the story, which is that Narad Muni was on his way to Vaikuntha. He met a Brahmana, and the Brahmana asked him, he was a very pukka Brahmana, and the Brahmana asked him, when you see Lord Narayan, ask him when I will go back to the spiritual world. And he also met a cobbler, And he told him he was going to Vaikuntha to see Lord Narayan, and the cobbler was very happy. And anyway, he went and saw Lord Narayan, and he asked him the question, when will this Brahmana go back home, back to Godhead? And he said, oh, it won't be for millions of births. And then he said, well, I also met a cobbler. He seemed like a nice devotee. And when will he go back to the spiritual world? And Lord Narayan said, well, he'll go back at the end of this lifetime. So the Narada Muni went back, and of course, Lord Narayan had said to him, because Narada Muni was surprised. So he said, well, just tell him that I was threading an elephant through the eye of a needle. And then that'll probably explain why I've said this. So when he went back, the Brahmana, the Pukka Brahmana, he was very surprised that he wouldn't be going back for millions of lifetimes. And then he asked him what he was doing, what the Lord was doing. And he said, he was threading an elephant through the eye of a needle. So the Brahmana, he says, nah, it can't be true. I don't think you even saw Narayan, Lord Narayan. So Narada Muni understood there that even though he was following all the rules and regulations very strictly, chanting mantras and doing all the rituals, everything, he actually didn't have the faith to be qualified to go back home, back to Godhead. Whereas the cobbler, when Narada Muni went to see him, he was he just says, "Oh, how wonderful! The Lord was threading an elephant through the eye of a needle. He can do anything. He's so wonderful." So then he understood that even though, because a cobbler is a very humble person, probably doesn't know, you know, many shlokas. He probably wasn't doing all the rituals and Vedic performances that are required, but he had absolute faith in the Lord. So there are many other examples, like Sudama Vipra offering broken rice. It wasn't a very opulent. We're supposed to offer everything opulently to the Lord. But he was just offering some broken rice. But the Lord relished it. And he couldn't get enough of it. Rukmini Devi had to stop him from taking more. She said, that's enough. And there's the example of the Brahmana who lived near Vrindavan, opposite a prostitute. And another very pukka Brahmana who was worshipping the deity, who was chanting so many mantras, who was cooking for the Lord, chanting verses from the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. It just so happened that they both left their bodies at the same time. And at that time, the Vishnu Dutas came to collect the prostitute, and the Yamadutas came to collect the servants of Lord Yamaraj, the Lord of Death, came to collect the Brahmana. And he was very surprised, and he asked, why is this? How come? And they explained, well, because that prostitute, she was hearing you chant your mantras and hearing you ringing your bell, and she was thinking, oh, what an elevated devotee of the Lord. Maybe, hopefully, one day I can become like that. Whereas you were thinking about criticizing this, how can a prostitute, such a lowly, degraded person, be living in this area near to Vrindavan, Like that. So that was your consciousness. So the point I'm making is that just actually following the rules and regulations, just like Rupa Goswami speaks of niyamagraha. So niyamagraha can mean one of two things. Either it's following the rules and regulations strictly, but not for the purpose of spiritual advancement. The rules and regulations are meant for making spiritual advancement, not for their own sake. But unfortunately, sometimes people may get just attached to just doing those. We get conditioned, we get into a habit of doing it, and just enjoy it for its own sake. But really, just like there's a few verses like that, which I made a note of. The two most important rules, smartavya satatam vishnu, vishmartavyo najatu sit, sarve vidhi nishedasyo, etayo eva kinkara. So from the Padma Purana, explaining there are actually two most important rules. Always remember Krishna, never forget him. And everything else is subservient. All the other rules and regulations should be in pursuance of those two injunctions. And there's another one from Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Yena tena prakarena mana Krishna niveshayat sarve vidhi nishedhasyo eteo eva kinkara. One should fix his mind on Krishna by any means. All the rules and prohibitions mentioned in the Shastras should be the servants of this principle. So does this mean that we shouldn't follow the rules and regulations? No, we should follow them, but we must strive for the balance which is between that those two extremes of just practicing for the sake of it or rejecting the rules and regulations whimsically or independently, not following them. So another point I wanted to discuss was about this sankalpa, this desire or this determination, because in the translation or in the purport, actually in the Bhagavatam verse, it says that the gopis' attempt to gain Krishna as their husband was therefore motivated not by a desire for personal gratification, but by their overwhelming desire to serve Krishna and to please him. So we have to have an intense desire to love and serve Krishna. And there's a few statements I've collected which illustrate that. Actually, in Shivaram Swami's book, Shuddha Bhakti Chintamani, he gives a little flavor of that. He says, no amount of effort or desire can transform devotion in practice into the ecstasy of purely spiritual devotion. Only when Krishna's mercy, in the form of a ray of prema, descends on a practitioner, does ecstatic devotion become manifest. But because ecstatic devotion is the first bud of love, devotion that eventually brings Krishna under his servant's control, he does not easily bestow it. And this is the part. Thus, when devotees shed torrents of tears in separation from the Lord, when they give everything for his loving service, when they are ready to die if they cannot attain him, only then does soft-hearted Krishna arrange for the greatest fortune to descend. At that time, devotees taste transcendental ecstasy. So, three things there. Shedding torrents of tears in separation from the Lord. Being prepared to give everything for his loving service. And being ready to die if they cannot attain him. Actually, it's not so difficult or strong as it may seem, because actually we're going to die anyway. So we might as well die in Krishna's trying to attain Krishna. So Gurudas reminded me this morning of the words of Krishna, which actually back up this. He's actually speaking to Kunti Devi in the Mahabharata, and he says, when she says, "Oh, we're going through so many troubles," and he says to her, "You must be patient and tolerate the dualities of material existence. Only mediocre persons aspire for an easygoing life of uneventfulness that is devoid of challenge and struggle. In fact, superior persons prefer the extremes of intense happiness or utter misery and abhor the dull middle ground." So that's Krishna himself speaking, that a superior person, he says, doesn't want just a comfortable life. Srila Prabhupada himself said that Krishna consciousness and an easygoing life don't go well together. So the point I wanted to make was that if we're going through difficult times, we have a very difficult experience, we should take it as Krishna's mercy in this spirit, that Krishna's helping us along the way. The tendency is, if we try to make ourselves as comfortable in this material world, we won't have that intensity, that overwhelming desire of the gopis to attain Krishna. So therefore, we should feel that if we are going through intense experiences, it's for our benefit. It's not just, Krishna's not punishing us for the sake of it just because he's a cruel God. He's actually helping us. So, and there is quite a few instances also in the Bhagavatam, like Dhruva Maharaj, he became very intense in his desire to get a kingdom greater than his grandfather, Lord Brahma. So intense that he attracted the mercy of the Lord. There's another example. I mean, Prahlad Maharaj went through extremely intense experiences. I've got to stop here. But the difference between him is that actually he didn't feel, he wasn't concerned about the external events that were happening to him. His father trying to kill him in so many ways. Because he was totally, had total faith or trust in Krishna. So if we are going through calamitous or very difficult, intense situations, it's just an opportunity for us to develop that full faith in Krishna, that he's actually our best friend, he's looking after us, he's wants to help us in every way, and therefore it's for our benefit. Sorry, I've gone over a little bit, so please forgive me. Because we've got now the ladies' sabbatical graduates who are going to be honored for their achievement here. It's a very nice occasion. So, Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaurabhaktavrinda ki jai.